Buckeye Extra is brought to you by the Columbus Springs Hospitals, changing people's lives by providing addiction and mental health treatment for adults, adolescents, and children through two Columbus-based hospitals and an outpatient service clinic. Columbus Springs Hospitals. There's hope. There's help. For full information, visit hopeincolumbus.com.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. It's my official duty to welcome you into the 27th episode of the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. Speaking of 27, if you want to go waste some time, that number has a special significance to Weird Al Yankovic. You will find it throughout his lyrics. I'm not going to quote any of the specific times because I can't really find a great way to make that sound witty, but go Google it. It's an interesting story. So we're at 27. Thanks to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With two hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit ColumbusSprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. Also want to remind everyone, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you won't miss an episode. You can get it on Google Play. We post the links to Dispatch.com. I think you can maybe have it just beam directly into your brain. Patrick, are we still working on that?
If you got headphones on.
If you have headphones, it goes into your brain. Okay, that actually makes sense. So we have perfected that technology. So anyway, make sure you're subscribed. That way you won't miss anything. We're going to get a little creative here as we head into the off season and through the summer months. But the plan is to bring you a podcast every week. So make sure you stay tuned. We're going to keep cranking these out and we'll find things to talk about. So two things that I want to bring up real quickly. We're going to have a special guest on here in a little bit. Adam Cairns, one of our fantastic photographers here at the Dispatch, who was our on-site photographer for the NCAA tournament. He went to Boise with us, with Rob Aller and me. We'll have him on here shortly to get some of his recollections of what it was like to be out there, what he looks for during a game, how he approaches shooting a game, and what he remembers from watching a historic 16-1 upset unfold live on the TV, but still we watch it all together. So that'll be here in just a moment. Had two things that I wanted to bring up here. One, as of Tuesday night, Ohio State has now offered two new players in the class of 2019. The April evaluation period, or the spring evaluation period, where they had two live weekends, that came to a close this past weekend. Ohio State was all over the place. We discussed a bunch of names of players that they viewed two weekends ago, but now after this past weekend, they've extended two new scholarship offers to recruits in the class of 2019. The first is Zeke Nnaji, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly. It's spelled N-N-A-J-I. He's a three-star power forward, according to 247sports.com. He's from Hopkins, Minnesota. It's always interesting, the different recruiting rankings. They will update their rankings at different times, and so someone might be ranked way differently one recruiting service as opposed to another. 247 Sports right now ranks him at the overall number 249 prospect in the country, a three-star recruit, number 3 prospect from Minnesota, and the number 39 power forward in the nation. However, I was reading a review on Rivals.com of some of the top stars around the country from this evaluation period, and they said that Zeke's going to be a top 50 recruit when all the recruiting rankings update. So definitely a rising recruit. He also holds offers from the likes of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Xavier, and Memphis. So someone to keep an eye on, that add him to the list. And we'll dive in more and more on some of these recruiting names here in the coming weeks. But that's one name. And the second name was Samuel Williamson, a four-star shooting guard from Rockwell, Texas. He announced his offer also last night on Twitter. I have seen a couple of people throw some shade in that he called it the University of Ohio State, which is obviously not correct. I have heard that before. I was sitting in a high school auditorium in Gannett, Pennsylvania, I believe that was February or March of 2008, and Terrell Pryor was announcing that he was committing to the University of Ohio State. So it has happened before. I'm not going to, let's not bury the kid on it. He's got plenty of other scholarship offers, and I'm sure he's just excited to announce that. 247 Sports ranks him as the number 7 overall prospect from Texas, number 13 shooting guard in the country, and overall number 105 recruit. I did find it very interesting, too. It's the same high school as former Ohio State guard Austin Grandstaff. After Austin committed to Ohio State, played 10 games, and then quit as part of that five-man recruiting class, he was the first of the five to bolt. I got the very strong understanding from a couple of people that I talked to down in Texas that Ohio State was not really welcome down there anymore. That this was not, that was not going to be a good idea for them to go down there and spend much time recruiting based on how things went with Austin Grant's staff. It just shows you how much things can change in such a short period of time. Now with an entirely new coaching staff and completely distanced from that whole situation, they go in and they offer a kid from there. So something to keep an eye on. He also holds offers from Florida, Kansas, Illinois, USC, and Texas, among others. The Florida one also just came after this most recent evaluation period. So just another name to throw into the onto the list there. I also wanted to bring up real quickly, too, I did some analysis for Dispatch.com. The post went up yesterday, I believe yesterday afternoon. But as I've sort of talked about on here, I track lineups throughout the season, and I track plus minuses for every lineup that Ohio State uses. And when you look at that stuff over the course of a game or two games, there's not a lot of specific relevance you can take from it in most cases. I mean, it could just be one particular bad matchup, or that just one night where, you know, one guy caught fire and so this lineup looks much better than it actually is. But over the course of a season, I think it can tell you a couple of things that are interesting. Ohio State used 116 different lineups this past season. Kata Bates-Diop was in 67 of those. Of the 116 different lineups that they used, only two of them will return next season. So there were only 2 5-man lineups that Ohio State used this past year that consisted entirely of players who will be on the roster and playing next year. And they didn't play much. There was a lineup of CJ Jackson, Musa Diallo, Andre Wesson, Caleb Wesson, and Kyle Young that made appearances in 2 games during the season, totaling 3 minutes and 33 seconds. They were outscored 10-4. And then the other lineup of CJ Jackson, Musa Diallo, Micah Potter, Andre Wesson, and Kyle Young played together for 8 seconds against Texas Southern. So you have 3 minutes and 41 seconds of returning time, accumulated time by lineups that will comprise entirely of players from last year. I just find that fascinating. There's a million different ways to look at how much Ohio State has lost from last season, what sort of challenge they have to replace all the players that are no longer there. But that really says a lot to me. I mean, they're essentially going to be starting lineups from scratch next season. So the best lineup, if you're wondering, and it was a lineup of Kata, CJ, Musa, Jayshon Tate, and Caleb Wesson. That lineup played 80 minutes and 41 seconds and outscored its opponents by 59 points. But it's also a lineup that primarily played in the non-conference. After that lineup was the starting lineup against North Carolina on December 23rd, and after that, they only played together 2 times the rest of the season. All 7 different starting lineups had positive ratings for the season. The lineup that saw the most playing time, the primary lineup for Ohio State of Kata Bates-Diop, CJ Jackson, Jayshon Tate, Caleb Wesson, and Cam Williams. They made 16 starts and totaled 212 minutes and 2 seconds. They outscored their opponents by 38 points, 385 to 347. And of all the lineups, 56 had positive plus minus rankings, 50 were negative, and 10 were even, usually just 0-0. So I just find that stuff interesting. I'm kind of a stat nerd at times, and you can read all the data on dispatch.com if you're interested in that kind of stuff. I think you'll enjoy it. And even if you're not, you know, throw a click my way. My boss is like that. So now we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll come back, and we're going to be joined by Adam Cairns. All right, now, I hope you like Adams, because we're about to double your pleasure in here. I'm psyched to bring onto the podcast one member of our incredible Dispatch photography group. If you're paying any attention at all to our NCAA tournament coverage in Boise, you gained an even greater appreciation for this guy's work. His name is Adam Cairns. He had the misfortune of spending a few days with Rob Aller and me as we saw the Buckeyes beat South Dakota State and then lose to Gonzaga out in Boise, Idaho in Taco Bell Arena. And so, first off, Adam, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Nice to be here.
All right. So, before we get in too much to what the tournament was like and what the experience was like, I'm wondering, I always get asked, well, why are you a writer? How'd you become a writer? And so having someone from the Dispatch on here, I'm curious, how did you get started into photography and how did you end up here?
I started at the Dispatch back in 2006. Wow. I was a intern, supposed to be 3-month internship, turned into eventually I was here for 11 months as an intern. And then I got hired at This Week Newspapers.
Okay.
So I spent 6 years at This Week, mainly covering high school sports. You name it. Every sport that they compete in the OHSAA. I covered state finals pretty much every night of the week covering sports. So that was a big part of my appreciation for sports and sort of passion for taking pictures at sporting events now.
One of the things that amazes me about all our photographers here is how well-versed you guys are. It's like someone can just drop in and shoot a basketball game. They do an amazing job, and then they go shoot City Hall or, I don't know, something that's like important. And so I'm wondering, like, if you've jumped from all these different sports, like, do you have a favorite?
Well, I grew up in Indiana. Really rich basketball history.
Yes.
So, I mean, I do like basketball.
Okay.
I don't know if it's my favorite sport. It's kind of hard to pick, like, your favorite kid. But it's definitely one of my favorites, just because it's nonstop action.
Mm-hmm.
You can shoot both ends of the court, so there's no downtime during games for photographers.
Okay.
The way we approach games, we have a variety of lenses that can cover everything from baseline to baseline. So we basically, we're shooting the entire duration of the game.
Right.
So that's, I like doing that. I like keeping busy. I like watching the action.
So when you talk about different lenses, how many different lenses or different cameras do you use in a game?
So we'll take the Taco Bell Arena experience and, yes. and what I did for the tournament. I carried three cameras. One was a sort of really wide angle lens that I, for one game, I sat in my lap. So you could see sort of the wide angle from the 3-point line to the hoop.
Okay.
Everything on the court. The second camera was kind of a medium range zoom where you can shoot sort of tighter shots of players in the paint, players shooting 3-pointers, which we saw a lot of.
So, yeah, 43 pointers in that first game.
Yeah. And then we have a sort of a long fixed telephoto lens that we use for everything that is on the other side of half court.
Okay. So during a game, are you just, you put one camera down, you grab the next one, or how does that work? Because your game day experience is so different from mine, and we're both focused on what we have to do that I don't get to see how this works. So how do you do that?
It's a ton of juggling. As soon as players cross half court, you're switching from one lens to the other. We do stuff with remote cameras where we are using our second hand, not the hand that fires the camera that we're holding. We use our left hand to fire a remote camera that's somewhere else in the arena. Sometimes we hang them over the hoop. Sometimes, as I did in Boise, we put them on the sideline, sort of facing the bench. So it's just an incredible amount of juggling with both hands, three cameras. There's a lot going on that you have a hard time following the game, really, because you're zoomed in on the players and you're just trying to get the best action shot you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure you have the right equipment in your hands to get that done.
So I've always wondered this: when you're using a remote camera, do you have any idea what you're getting until you, like, maybe you go look at a computer, or how do you know what you're getting from the remote camera if you're not looking through it? This is a dumb question.
No. It's a great question. We have a lot of pictures that are completely unusable from the remote. It's a sort of a low risk, high reward type situation where you hang a camera up above the hoop. Something's going to happen during the game. You just don't know exactly what you're going to catch. So it's a lot of editing after the fact to go through all those photos, because you're hitting the remote button whenever you think something might be happening in the vicinity of where your camera's pointed.
Okay.
And all you really hope for is to get one or two good pictures from a game from a remote camera. There's not a whole lot you can expect to get from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just bonus. It's something where I'm stuck sitting on the sideline or the baseline, and I can't be up above the basket, so I'm going to put a camera there and hopefully give a different perspective on what I'm watching during the game.
Well, we have a fantastic photo down in sports here at our building of David Bell, of all players, throwing down a dunk in his very, very limited playing time. And it's taken from one of the overhead cameras. And if it's your photo, feel free to claim it. Otherwise, I'm not sure who took it. But
it's probably Kyle Robertson.
But it's fantastic. And the fact that you guys as a staff can bring those different viewpoints. I mean, I've always said that, I hope that people will read my work, but I know they're going to read my work when they see the photos that you guys provide, because we have incredible photographers. And when we have someone, especially on site like we did in Boise, where you're able to capture an NCAA tournament run, abbreviated as it may be, I mean, it adds so much to what we do. I mean, it's as important for you to be there as it is for me to be there, or for Rob to be there. And so when you're coming into a situation like that where you're going to an arena that I presume you'd never been, Taco Bell Arena?
No, never to Boise.
Okay. Yeah, same here. How do you get situated? How do you get prepared? Because I know, I think you got in the night before the South Dakota State game, and I seem to remember maybe you came to the arena and check some stuff out.
I did. I got there really early the day of the game.
Okay.
Early enough to catch the Gonzaga UNC Greensboro game.
That was it, UNC Greensboro.
That was the game, because the winner of that was going to play Ohio State in the next round.
Right.
So I got there plenty early to figure out how to get from the media workroom to the baseline and find our shooting positions. They have, I think there's probably almost 20 shooting positions on each baseline, so two rows, and that includes video cameras and team photographers and all the wires and
people with iPhones,
local newspapers, yeah, people with iPhones. So figure out where my shooting position was. I think I pulled off a trade with another photographer so I could shoot Ohio State on offense both tabs.
Okay.
And then you basically just, I was there early enough to sort of do my scouting on Ohio State's next opponent. So watching Gonzaga play was beneficial, just knowing what kind of players they had, sort of what I was going to be looking for if Ohio State won its first game and that was going to be their opponent the next day.
So do you go in with an idea of what you're trying to shoot, or do you let the game kind of dictate what you're trying to shoot?
The game always dictates. There's no, with sports, you can't plan for much. Okay. You can put yourself in the best position to make a nice photo, but you can't always dictate how the game's going to go or what kind of pictures you're going to get from a game. That's just completely up to the players. Like you mentioned, Ohio State shot 43 pointers.
Right.
Not the easiest picture to take for a photographer. We're sitting on the baseline. There's, you know, 9 other players between us and the shooter part of the time if they're on the behind the 3-point arc. So it's definitely a challenge, games like that. When they play in the paint and on the baseline, we have a little bit easier time making nice action pictures. But when it's a perimeter game like that, it gets pretty challenging.
Now, if I remember right, though, you did get the shot of Cam Williams at the end.
And that's just pure luck. We had sort of a space opened up. He was kind of on the corner, doing the fadeaway. And I had a clear shot at him across the paint behind the arc. And it ended up being a nice photo uninterrupted with other players in the foreground. So that actually worked out in my part. But it was just pure luck that there were no other players in between me and him.
Well, there's some saying about luck happens where determination and preparation meet or something like that. I've seen that as like an inspirational quote somewhere. So, but obviously, I mean, you were cognizant enough of like what was going on in the game because Cam had a 3-pointer and then he had a 4-point, or he got fouled on a 3 and he had a 4-point play in the span of like 30 seconds that I think it was tied at that point. And so you knew that at that point that like basically whatever happened was the game. And so you had to be aware of not just the situation on the court, but like your line of sight, and you're looking for, you know, the best shot that you can get. So like you said, like you can't always prepare for what's going to happen, but you have to be somewhat prepared.
You do. And it's, I mean, years of shooting basketball games is how I prepared. I mean, it's, you know, that something has to happen for Ohio State to score some points, you know. And it's going to be probably a long shot, but you're watching the ball, you're watching who gets open, and it's part of its luck. But the preparation part is shooting lots and lots of games before a big one, like an NCAA tournament game.
Do you have any idea how many raw photos you take during one basketball game?
On road games, like at Taco Bell Arena, we shoot a lot because the motor drive on these cameras shoots 12 frames per second.
Okay.
So you get a sequence, you can easily get on one shot, you can have 20 photos.
Wow.
So it's a lot to go through after the fact. When we're shooting at the Schottenstein Center, we use lights. So we get basically one picture every second or two.
Okay.
We're not using a motor drive. It just, the lights fire and we have to wait for them to recycle before we can take another picture.
Okay.
So if you've been to the games, you sometimes see the big strobe flash, and not everybody notices it, but then once you notice it, you start to see it throughout the game. And
right,
we end up taking probably a couple hundred pictures at a home game, but on an away game where we're not using lights, it's probably close to 1,500 pictures.
Okay.
It's a lot to go through after a game.
Yeah. So what is that process like? How long does that take you to figure out? I mean, like to know that you got that Cam Williams shot, for example, like how long did it take you to identify, okay, I got that shot, and like, I mean, and then they figure out here that they're going to run that shot. Like how long does that take?
Well, so our cameras let us tag certain pictures that we know are good. So
okay,
we'll take some pictures and then we'll look at the back of the camera and scroll through to see what we shot. And then you can press a button and it puts a little lock icon on the,
okay,
on the photo. So then when we bring those up on our computers after the game, you can just sort it by the pictures that we have marked as being good moments.
Okay.
So it helps us as we edit during the game afterwards, so we can narrow that 1,500 pictures down to 100, and then we pick from there what the best moments were. So we're constantly, you shoot, you look down, you edit, you go back, you shoot. So during timeouts, we're just constantly just scrolling through our cameras and trying to tag as many good pictures as we think we got that might be important, so that after the game, we're not going through all the pictures that weren't as good.
Right. Okay. So when you think about being at Taco Bell Arena in those couple of days, like what sort of challenges did that arena present, and what do you think about obviously the photos that you're able to get? Because I know the galleries, for those of you that go to dispatch.com, I mean, the galleries all did very well, and people were clicking on that and viewing them. I mean, they were fantastic. What sticks out now when you think about when you shot there?
So we're not just shooting, we're tweeting, we're sending pictures out.
Right.
There's a lot going on during the game, and the challenges of March Madness and the tournament is that there's more photographers. And so we're really crammed on the baseline. Our knees are overlapping the two photographers on either side of you as we're sitting cross-legged. So it was tight shooting quarters. I think the Gonzaga game was a kind of a late start for us here. So yep. We had deadline constrictions where we were, I was trying to get pictures onto my phone from the camera so I could send them back to the office.
Oh, wow.
To make the first edition. So we have cords and wireless contraptions that we use to get the pictures off of the cameras onto our iPhones so we can send them digitally to Twitter or to back to the office. So that was the biggest part, was trying to keep up with the pace of your tweets, but also trying to send out relevant photos during the games that are sort of timely, and then links afterwards to the galleries. But the pace of the games really dictates sort of how many pictures we can get out, and
sure.
if there's no timeouts, we can't really stop and edit our pictures. So we're kind of hoping for pauses here and there where we can actually do some editing work.
Oh, I'm straight up praying for pauses. I mean, especially in a game like that. I mean, on deadline, and when they blow a lead and it's tied late, and you're just like, I mean, as soon as this game ends, I've got to have my story done. And so anytime there's a timeout, you're thanking the deadline gods and moving on.
Well, and so the Gonzaga game, I had a picture, I think it was maybe Jayshon Tate. I could be wrong on that. It was, I'm looking at my laptop now, CJ Jackson, and Andre Wesson. Andre Wesson, uh-huh. He was kind of, this is the picture we used on the sports cover. He was kneeling down. You could tell that they're about to lose the game, and it was, I shot it at 10:01 p.m. We had a 10:30 drop-dead deadline for the first edition, so I have to have the pictures back to the editor so they can go through them, send them to our designers in Austin, Texas. So they build in a little extra time there, but I basically had to get that picture off my camera as soon as I shot it.
Wow.
And sent it to our editor back here in Columbus. And it was all done pretty quickly. I mean, it was just a matter of seconds after I took the picture that I knew that it was probably going to be a defining moment from the game, mm-hmm. where they were disappointed in the result and that Ohio State was going to lose. So it was going to be the most representative shot that I knew I had from the game, because in close games, you get a lot of action. You don't get a lot of reaction. And I'm trying to watch the bench and see what the bench players are doing, how they're reacting, how Chris Holtmann was reacting, because my shooting position was right next to the Ohio State bench. So it was, I could get some good reaction of them, but I wanted the players on the court and to see how they handled the game and how they were going to handle the loss.
So what was it like being so close to Holtmann and being so close to the bench? My viewpoint, I was opposite side of the court, roughly mid-court. Great viewpoint, but I couldn't hear anything or pick up like things from being around the team. Did you notice anything, or were there any experience, like anything that you heard, or just what was it like being that close to the team and to the coach as they're going through the tournament?
Not so much the coach. I mean, he's animated throughout the game, but the bench players, they react big time whenever there's a three-pointer or whenever there's a big play. I shoot the shot, and then I look over to the bench and see what the reaction is from the towel gang and the guys that are at the end of the bench. And they're fun to shoot, and especially when you're that close to them and you can see how excited they get for their teammates.
Uh-huh.
It makes for a good photo.
Do you watch? I wonder what it's like, because when you're watching the game action and you're looking for this, you're looking for that. It seems like every game, I mean, there's always a photo of the coach. And the coach doesn't do a whole lot other than kind of pace the sideline and yell a little bit. What is it like looking for a shot or trying to get a shot of the coach, maybe as opposed to the game action? Is it any different?
It's sort of the same play. I mean, like if there's a big play, usually the coach will do something to get his team ready for the next sequence. So let's say Gonzaga hits a three-pointer. That's when you're going to see the coach do something to get his team ready on offense. I don't always watch for what the coach is doing.
Sure.
You can hear them yelling at the refs if there's a bad call. That's yeah. that's the most animated they get, is when they don't agree with a call one way or the other. So those always make for good photos. Sometimes you have the ref in the picture. Sometimes you just have the coach yelling across the court. And you, obviously it's a still photo, so you're not hearing what the coach is saying, which is good some of the time. But in Holtman's case, he's animated pretty much the whole game. He's up. He doesn't sit down much. So he's fun to watch. It's it makes for good photos no matter when you see him coaching. And a lot of times, especially the Shaughnessy Center, we're not super close to him,
mm-hmm.
so we kind of have to shoot it across the court. But in Taco Bell Arena, where we were, I was just a couple feet from him, so I could make some different pictures that we're not used to seeing of him and of the rest of the bench.
Does any of that compare, or how does that compare? I suppose maybe, like, I know you said you're not exactly as close when you're at the Schottenstein Center, but like shooting Thad, where Thad was a little bit more limited with how much he can move. Does that change anything, or was that any different for you?
They both react to the same things. It makes it a little easier. I mean, when Thad was in the same spot and wasn't sort of pacing up and down the bench and on the sideline, but the you know where to look when you have a coach that's going to be pretty much in the same spot. And he mm-hmm. he got passionate about the game.
Oh, sure.
He argued a call just like anybody else, and his face got bright red whenever
right.
he got heated about something. So he was a good one for reaction as well. Holtman, he's more animated with his hands, and he's sort of pacing around a little bit more, but it's the same. All coaches, when they think they got a call that went against them that probably shouldn't have, then they're going to yell and they're going to be animated about it.
Well, I'm told that this remains a family podcast, so I'm not going to ask you for specifics on this, but occasionally when I'm on the road, my seat will be in different spots, and sometimes I will end up right behind the bench, or I'll end up on the baseline, and that's when you can actually hear the coach during a game. And I can say from personal experience that you could hear Thad use colorful language at times. I don't know about Holtman. I haven't really heard too much from him along those lines, but like, what is that experience like? And without, like I said, without dropping us to an R rating or whatever, I mean, do you hear much along those lines?
It's funny, you don't. You sort of tune out everything that you hear behind you. We're focused on what our eyes see, and I think somehow that sense takes over with what we're seeing versus what we're hearing. When arenas get loud, you still have to focus even harder trying to make the picture on what you're seeing, that you're really tuning out all of the noise behind you and everything that the coach may be saying. You're trying to make the most animated, best photo of the action and of whatever you're looking at. So I think it's funny how the human body, it can focus on one sense over another. We go into some pretty loud venues, and you still have to use your eyes to be able to make nice photos and compose pictures through a metal camera. So it is interesting how that works. We sometimes put in earplugs just to try to
okay.
focus on what our eyes see and what we can do to make a better picture. So I know when you're watching the game, you're looking and you're listening, and it's a totally different experience when you're at home, even watching it, and you're getting the announcer's take on it. I mean, we're solely focused on what we see and how it looks, composing a picture and watching for big moments. I mean, if you hear a yell across the court and somebody gets injured, or a coach is screaming at a ref, you obviously look that direction, but you're not really focused on the words that are coming out of the mouth versus their hand movements and their the wrinkle on their forehead when they're getting mad. So that's how we look at it. We're not listening quite as much for specific things, whereas our ears kind of show us where our eyes need to look.
I've always, whenever I've covered high school football, and whether it's playoffs or whatever, my viewpoint, I always go down and I get to where the chain gang is, and I stand by the person that stands there and at the line of scrimmage, and I just plant myself next to that person all game, and then that way I am right in the middle of everything all the time. And sometimes you hear, you know, oh, we're gonna they call this play, but then they decide to call that play, and then that ends up being the story. Like, I like when you can get little nuggets like that when you're right there close to the action. So and you're right, but then you also have to be focused on what's right in front of you, because you can't miss the obvious.
Yeah, so I mean, football is a good example where, I mean, I'll have to look at how the team lines up, and if trips right, you know they're probably going to throw the ball. So you prepare yourself based on what you see. Ears are kind of secondary if you can get any extra information from them to help you, you know, prepare for what picture you might be about to take. It helps, but in general, we're using our eyes. We're constantly scanning the field, scanning the court, trying to figure out what might happen next, or if a player gets open, if in the corner for a three-pointer, I can sort of see out of the corner of my eye that he might be there, and then I'll know that, you know, that might be a place where I make a picture. So I'll be ready with the correct lens and looking for that with my eyes versus using my ears for that sort of thing.
Well, and last question here, and then we'll wrap it up. And thanks again for making time during the day to come on here and talk about all this. But when I think about what the experience is like in Boise, I also think about what it was like watching Virginia lose as the first number one team in the history of the NCAA tournament to lose to a 16 seed. What do you remember about that experience? And how that just seemed like a very surreal evening all around.
It absolutely was. It was, I mean, I'm a big basketball fan if I'm at the game or just watching on TV in general. So seeing a 16 beat a one for the first time, we were at a bar in downtown Boise, Dan Dockich.
With Dan Dockich.
Yeah. The whole thing was very surreal. It was a good time. I don't watch games the same as when I'm actually working a game.
Sure.
So I mean, I can enjoy it as a fan and not really get immersed in the kind of X's and O's of what player gets open where. You just kind of take in the whole experience. So that was downtown Boise. If you've never been there, it's kind of like a Madison or Bloomington. It has that kind of feel, maybe a little, obviously a smaller scale, but restaurants and bars, plenty to do, plenty to eat.
Found a good record store.
Yeah, you did. And so we were, I mean, kind of in the middle of it all, and everybody was focused on the TVs. It was obviously most of the people that were in town that week were basketball fans.
Right.
So that helped with the energy in the room when we were watching the game. And it was, I mean, Dan Dockich was tweeting live about how big a deal it was to witness a 16 beat a one. So we were all part of that. I felt like, even though I wasn't at the game, that we witnessed some history.
Right.
So that was a great experience. That it's something that, you know, you're not gonna forget the first time that happens, that you watch that as a fan.
Yeah, and that I enjoyed as that game was going on, and they just, it wasn't like it was a buzzer beater. It was just blow after blow after blow, and like they'd hit a three and Virginia would call timeout and everybody would be cheering, and just it was a great experience.
And you knew that whole second half, you're just thinking to yourself, like, wow, this is actually gonna happen.
Right.
I can't believe it. And they just kept pulling away further and further, and eventually, you know, the rest is history. But it was fun to watch, for
right,
sure.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back in a minute. But again, thanks to Adam Cairns for coming on. You can find him on Twitter at Atomic Photo, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Atomic Photo.
Where did Atomic Photo come from?
Adam Cairns was taken. Atomic kind of sounds like Adam C. It was easier to remember. Nobody can spell my last name. So we go Atomic Photo.
Did you ever get called Adam Ant as a kid?
No.
Okay.
Did you?
I did.
I'm sorry.
We'll share some more Adam-related miseries maybe on another podcast. But until next time, thanks again, Adam. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right, we're back. Thanks again to my Adam counterpart here at the Dispatch. One of my Adam counterparts at the Dispatch. There is at least one other one that I can think of off the top of my head for coming in here. We have an incredible photography staff here at the Dispatch, and I try to give them as much credit as I can at every opportunity that I can. And so it really meant a lot to have Adam come on and to be able to share some of his insight into what it's like to shoot a game and what it's like to put up with me, and what it's like to be there on site and looking at a game that I'm also looking at, but from a very different perspective. So I hope you enjoyed that, because I find that kind of stuff fascinating. So before we wrap up, I want to say thanks again to our sponsor, Columbus Springs Hospitals. With two hospitals and an outpatient services clinic, Columbus Springs Hospitals is helping to change people's lives every day. With skilled counselors and compassionate caregivers, they provide effective patient treatment in addiction and mental health for adults, adolescents, and children. Visit columbusSprings.com today and find out more about each of their locations. There's hope, there's help at Columbus Springs Hospitals. I want to send a shout out this weekend, or I should say on Friday. Make sure you get to your local record store. Go pick up the new Frank Turner album. I'm unbelievably stoked for that. Check out his music video for Make America Great Again. It's a fantastic, or maybe it's just a Make America Great. It's hilarious. And Frank is amazing. And I can't wait for his new album. Matt and Kim's new album also comes out this weekend on Friday. So pick that one up too. They're always a blast. I unfortunately missed them when they were in Columbus, but they were the same day as Brian Fallon. And sometimes you got to pick. And I went with Brian. No regrets, but I do love Matt and Kim. Very excited for their new album. I'm also getting out of here and I'm headed over to Spoonful Records here in Columbus to go buy some Oasis pins that they posted on Instagram last night that they are selling. So I'm going to go pick up some swag for my work backpack. So when you see me coming, if you didn't know that I was the goofy looking dude anyway, I'll be the goofy looking dude with the Oasis pins on his backpack now. So I'm headed out of here to go take care of that. And then I'll probably get back in front of the computer and come up with some more content for you. But as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and any otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, who I have learned is not an air traffic controller, but was just honored at our company awards banquet on Friday for best in a supporting role, which to call it a supporting role sitting in this room, I mean, he is really running the things and just dragging me along. So I'm not sure if that's maybe the most accurate title for you, but either way, congratulations to Patrick. That was very well deserved. Thanks for pushing the gears and making me sound better. And until next time, thanks everyone.
Sure, and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.